Chapter 13. Scorched Earth. The Primarchs gathered in one of the smaller strategiums aboard the Invincible Reason. The chamber was dark, and despite its narrow dimensions, it seemed to Sanguinius that the walls withdrew from the Tacticarium table, draping themselves in secrets and shadows. The table's hololithic display was of a massive crater on Davin's surface. It was surrounded by a jagged mountain chain. In its centre stood a temple. The fane was the largest construct the scans had detected, and its position within one of the most distinct geographic features of the planet signalled its importance. The reports sent from Davin by the 16th Legion, the sanitized, misleading records, called the structure the Delphos. A narrow gorge ran from the crater, cutting through the mountains. The scans had picked up other human artifacts along its length, statuary, Sanguinius deduced. The gorge looked like a processional avenue to the Delphos. At the edge of the mapped region, a lone conical mountain rose from a plain, like an inverted image of the crater's formation. It had a building of some kind on its peak. The construction was smaller, though, making it a secondary target. Picked screens on the periphery of the table summarized the Auspex readings of the rest of the planet.
"There is nothing down there," the lion said.
Sanguinius pointed to the temple.
"I hardly call that nothing," he said. "We know the Davinites were primitive. The ships you found were proof of that. They had to rely on poor salvage. This temple is a work of monumental construction."
"Granted," said the lion. "But there is nothing unnatural about it. After what we've encountered, how much weight are we going to place on something built of stone by human hands?"
"Are we going to ignore it?"
"No. My point is the absence of any activity. The planet is deserted. All evidence points to a total exodus."
"To Pandarax," said Gilliman.
"At least in part. Perhaps elsewhere too. But there is no one here. That makes our course of action clear."
"Does it?" Gilliman asked.
"I'm surprised you haven't already proposed it, Rabute. We should launch cyclonic torpedoes without delay. If we destroy Davin, we open the way to Terra."
Sanguinius shook his head.
"It cannot be that simple."
"It was in the Epicimos system."
"You don't pretend the situations are identical?"
"Identical, no. Comparable, yes."
"Because of the necrosphere? Because there are huge demonic constructs in both cases?"
"Other than size, the nature of the objects is quite different," Gilliman pointed out. "The principle stands," said the lion. "We have seen it twice already. We cannot destroy the objects themselves, but on the correct target, the devastation we unleash must be total."
"I disagree," Sanguinius said. "You think we should have destroyed Piran rather than assault the Manufactorum?"
"With hindsight, yes."
"No,"
said Sanguinius.
"No."
He leaned his fists on the Tacticarium table. He stared at the hololithic representation of the Delphos, willing it to reveal its secrets to him.
"If we had done that, we would still be trapped on the other side of that gate, or vaporized by its defences."
"You sound very sure," said Gilliman.
He was being unusually reserved, holding back his own tactical views. For the time being, he seemed to be limiting his role to that of the doubter.
"What troubles you, brother?" Sanguinius wondered.
"It is something that runs deep, I think."
"I am sure," he said to Gilliman.
He felt the muscle memory of the sword blow that had carried him through fate and destroyed the Manufactorum. He had severed the ties of destiny and darkness.
"What I experienced in the forge..."
He thought about what he could say, even to his brothers.
"We did not triumph through brute force. We have been confronting the symbols. Our successful attacks have been symbolic too. They have been the only ones possible, and targeted at the heart of what opposed us. This war has taken us far beyond the realm of the rational. And think about why we are here at all. Why do you think destroying Davin will defeat the Ruinstorm? Because this is where Horus fell, and this is where the war began. The logic is symbolic. Very well, then. We must follow the symbolism to its end. We must stand on the spot where Horus fell."
"I accept your argument about Piran," said the lion. "The nature of what happened in the Manufactorum escapes me." He was clearly displeased by the mystery. "That it played a critical role is clear, though. But there was an enemy on Pirron. This planet is deserted."
"I wonder if Horus was as confident in his assumptions when he came here."
The lion glared. "I am not Horus."
"No," Sanguinius said, keeping his voice level. "You are not. And you are not what he has become. But remember, brother. Remember what he was. I remember. I remember how wise I thought our father was to make him War Master. I remember Horus's doubts, how he wondered if he was worthy of the task. How could this brother turn on us? Remember that none of us saw his treachery coming. Our father didn't see it coming. Remember all of this, and remember that here is where Horus fell." He paused. "Now tell me you are certain there is nothing below."
"He's right," Gilliman said. "I would like to know what happened to Horus." "You think I don't? And if Sanguinius is correct, what then? Is our strategy to replicate Horus's error?"
Gilliman turned back to Sanguinius, an eyebrow raised. "Where do you stand, Ribute?" Sanguinius finally demanded. "Why won't you tell us?"
"I wanted to hear you both out. We have a lot of data, but it does not point in a clear direction."
He gestured towards the exterior of the hull.
"We have just come through unambiguous evidence of the importance of Davin. But the necrosphere tells us nothing about how we should deal with the problem this world presents."
He drummed his fingers on the table.
"On balance," he said, "I agree with the lion. Our enemy isn't here. It is somewhere in the necrosphere. You saw it, Sanguinius. You've done battle with it already."
"More than you know," the angel thought.
"We can't fight it until it declares itself," he said.
"I agree. Destroying Davin may bring it out. In any event, I think a landing here will be a distraction."
"It will not be," Sanguinius insisted. "We have to know what is down there. We have to go." He stared at the center of the map, thinking about the journey, how barriers immense beyond comprehension had tried to stop them, and how they had broken through. Their victories appeared to him as both impossible and inevitable.
"We are going planetside," he realized. "We have no choice. Fate decrees it."
The moment the thought crossed his mind, he doubted it. He had been doubting fate since Pirron. He was torn between certitude and hope. He didn't know which to embrace. He looked back and forth between the lion and Gilliman. Neither of them had his experience of time. Neither had lived their own deaths. Neither could truly perceive destiny concretely. They didn't fully understand the implications of being here now, where everything had begun. They thought they did. They could appreciate the symmetry of returning to the source of the war, but they could not feel viscerally the chains of inevitability and fate that were drawing them to this nexus, this singular point in space and time, where fate might be in flux. No, they could not understand. There was someone who would, though.
"I must speak with Conrad," Sanguinius said.
The lion snorted with surprise.
"You think he will convince me?"
"No," said Sanguinius. "Nevertheless, I would speak with him."
The lion shrugged.
"My decision is made."
As Sanguinius reached the Strategium's door, the lion said,
"I will take action, without delay."
"You will be wrong to do so," Sanguinius said, and left.
He saw the future again. The barrier to his vision fell when the brain-piercing whine had ceased. There was certainty again. The charnel house of the universe unfolded before him, every step known in the moment before it arrived. There was no comfort in this. There was no comfort in anything. Comfort was the delusion of the weak. There was, though, satisfaction. Kurz could look upon the morbid face of time and once again share in the humour. For a long period, humour was all he had. The moments succeeded each other without change. The ship travelled, it entered the warp, it translated back into the materium.
Kurz sensed the changes, but they meant nothing. His cell might as well have been a stasis field. Anonymous guards changed shifts. The lion did not return to speak with him. Time stagnated. There were no actions for Kurz to take, no decisions in the physical limbo. At last, limbo ended. He looked up, cracked lips peeling back over the stumps of his teeth. Before the bootsteps sounded, the Night Haunter was smiling. This was much better than a second conversation with the lion. Much better. The cell door ground open, and Sanguinius entered. He stood before Kurz, saying nothing.
"Don't you know how to begin, brother?" Kurz thought. "Then let me help you." "So," he said, "you have come to free me."
"Have I?"
"Do you doubt my insight?"
"I doubt your honesty."
"You know better than that. I have never lied to you, Sanguinius. The truth is a great weapon."
He twitched his fingers, numb from the pressure of the manacles. He wanted his claws. They were the truth given form. They cut as it did. They were as deaf to entreaty. Still, the truth of darkness was always there. It was always his. And in the end, it would do the cutting, the severing and the slaughter, whether he was able to pronounce it or not. "Do you know where we are?" Sanguinius asked.
"The lion did not consult me about the itinerary," Kurz said.
And then he heard Sanguinius's next words in his mind before the angel spoke them. "We are in orbit over Davin."
"Ah. I am fascinated to see why that is the reason you are going to free me."
Sanguinius ignored him. "What is down there?" he asked.
"Haven't you taken the trouble to scan? Rebute must have. I would check with him."
"The scans show nothing. What is waiting for us there, Conrad?" And suddenly there was ambiguity. The potential futures multiplied around the word us. In one branch, Sanguinius meant himself and Kurz. In another, he meant the Triumvirate. The futures divided, splitting again and again before rejoining at critical junctures. Death was the constant. It drew the strands together. But a fog of potential lingered around it.
"I don't know what is on the surface," Kurz said. "How could I? I didn't even know we were at Davin until just now."
He did not expect to have that knowledge. His certainties were centred around his end and the immediate moment. No, he would never expect to know what was on Davin. Yet the fact he didn't bothered him. His ignorance was a reminder of the earlier blankness. There was no reason to connect the two, yet he felt the link, and unease wormed its way into his veins again. His lips pressed together, turning his smile into a grimace. This was not the way of things. He was the Night Haunter. He was the bringer of nightmares, the murderer of sleep. Unease was his to bestow, not his to suffer. "I believe fate is down there," Sanguinius said.
"Whose? Yours or mine?"
"Horace's was."
"You didn't answer my question."
"I think it might be fate itself." Kurz saw himself answer before he did. The inevitability of his words made them true, though he did not know why.
"I think you are right,"
he said. Truth and uncertainty collided. The unease grew. Sanguinius cocked his head, listening to something on his voxbead. His eyes hardened. "Rebute is returning to the Samothrace," he said.
"I can see this concerns you."
"The lion plans to bombard Davin with cyclonic torpedoes." Again, the import of the words registered with Kurz before they were said. The unease reached a point of crisis. The future rushed in, blazing at a point of critical disjuncture. Sanguinius stood on the surface of Davin in one branch. In another, the planet flew apart under the lion's bombardment. There was another branch, too, murkier, far more uncertain, hovering on the edge of potential. It blurred the future's divide. It made both possibilities true.
"Why have you come to free me?" Kurz asked.
That Sanguinius was going to take him from the cell had suddenly become imminent.
turning into a concrete inevitability in the last few seconds. Sanguinius's reasons remained beyond his reach as they flickered and changed in microseconds, caught in the tempest of the angel's uncertainty. A klaxon began to sound. The doubts lifted from Sanguinius's face, his eyes hardened with determination. "Don't you know?" he said. "Because you do not die on Davin, and neither do I." Sanguinius left the cell. He turned to the guards, standing a few yards down. "I'm taking the prisoner with me," he said. "Prepare him for transport." The two dark angels hesitated.
"Lord Sanguinius," one of them said, "we have received no orders about this from the Lion."
"Nor will you." The klaxon boomed through the corridors. The Invincible Reason was maneuvering into position for the bombardment. "I have no authority over you. Nevertheless, I am giving this command. I will not be opposed in this." Sanguinius placed his hand on the hilt of the blade in carmine. He did not draw it. The act was less a threat than a reminder. He had no intention of harming the legionaries. Physically opposing him, though, was more than they could do. He spread his wings, lifting them high. He filled the corridor. He towered over the dark angels. "Do what your honor demands," he said. "Know that the responsibility for what happens now is mine, not yours. These events are beyond your ability to control." The legionaries did not move, but they did not raise their guns. "Know this too," Sanguinius said. "What I do for the Imperium. So does the Lion. Nothing that happens now changes this fact."
"We cannot let you pass, Lord Sanguinius," the other guard finally said.
"I understand," he said. "And you have my respect." Sanguinius drew the blade in carmine and smashed the blade against the helm of one guard, splitting it open and staggering the Dark Angel. He whirled and seized the other guard before he could fire. He raised the Dark Angel and slammed him against the wall. His breath hissing with anger at the necessity of what he did, he struck both guards with the flat of the blade, hammering them into unconsciousness.
"Forgive me," he said.
He turned from them to a small chamber a few paces further up the hall. It was a guard post. He entered it, yanked open a plasteel vault, and took the chains and neuromanacles he found inside. He returned to Kurz and worked in silence as he transferred the Night Haunter from the wall shackles to the new restraints. The beats of the klaxon continued, counting away the time before Davin's annihilation.
"No threats?" Kurz asked. "No warnings that I will die if I try to escape?"
"Escape to where, Conrad?"
"Well said. There is no escape for any of us, is there?"
Perhaps not, Sanguinius thought. He was not certain, though, and so he felt hope. Destiny was tightening into a knot on Davin. He could feel his actions being dictated by events that marched forwards unstoppable, to ends he could not perceive. But on Piran, he had cut through such a knot. There was a possibility he did not wish to articulate, for fear of extinguishing a frail and precious flame. Soon, he hoped, it would be strong enough for him to speak of it. He took Kurz down from the wall. He shackled the Night Haunter's hands behind his back, but left his legs free. Kurz cocked his head at the sound of the klaxons.
"I hear the blaring of your time running out," he said.
"There is time enough," Sanguinius said. He thought of what Kurz had done to his sons. He thought of the dead of the sanguinary guard on Macragge, and of Ascalon's severed arm. He faced his rage at his brother's crimes. Then he did what was necessary for the Imperium and for his father. He yanked on the chain attached to Kurz's neck and hauled the Night Haunter into a run down the corridor. Kurz laughed as they ran past the fallen guards.
"You do your very best to bring me joy, brother."
"Sanguinius," the Lion shouted through the angel's vox-speed, "what are you doing?"
"What I must, as you are. But you are wrong.
You are setting us against each other. This is madness."
"No, it is necessary, and it is fated." He shut down the channel, cutting the Lion off mid-roar. Sanguinius opened a vox channel to his chapter masters, grateful for the preparations he had made before taking the Thunderhawk to the Invincible Reason. "Launch drop pods,"
he ordered. Immediate landing in the vicinity of the temple. All forces away now! He and Kurz ran down the halls of the Dark Angel's battleship, racing for the bay where his gunship waited. The Night Haunter kept laughing, and laughed harder as the Lion sent troops to stop them, and Sanguinius battered them down. With every Dark Angel he harmed, Sanguinius felt the knot of destiny closing, growing tighter, choking off one future after another. He did not know how far the Lion would go to stop him. Sanguinius was pushing him hard, risking the fragile trust that existed between the brothers.
"We only really trust ourselves," he thought, "if we can even be said to do that."
"The Ninth Legion is landing in force," Holguin observed. The Lion gripped the arms of his throne. He took a breath, forcing himself to see clearly through the red haze of anger.
"Sanguinius must be mad," Farith Redloss said.
"Launch from Bay 30,
a servitor's mechanical voice intoned.
The flat announcement signalled the flight of the Thunderhawk Vicini from the Invincible Reason.
"More specs," the Lion said. "Give me a trajectory."
"Towards Davin, my lord." "What are your orders?" Stennius asked.
"Do we shoot my brother down, you mean?" the Lion thought.
Wood creaked beneath his grip.
"Damn you, Sanguinius. Damn you for forcing that choice on me."
"Track it all the way down," he said.
He knew where the Angel was heading. He gave the command solely because one was needed. "Why did he take Kurz?" said Holguin. "What sense does that make?"
"None,"
said Redloss.
"Is he mad?"
"He acts according to his convictions," the Lion said. "He is wrong, and we must act for the Imperium."
"The fleet is in position," Stennius said. "Bombardment targets locked."
"So noted, Captain," the Lion said.
Then Gilliman was voxing.
"You can't fire now," he said.
The Lion killed the vox.
"My lord,"
Holguin began.
"I will have silence,"
the Lion told him. The noise of the bridge fell to a murmur. Davin filled the oculus, its atmosphere streaked by the fires of the drop pod descents. The decision loomed before the Lion. He had to make it now. The madness of Sanguinius's actions convinced him even more firmly of the need to destroy Davin. The world was dangerous. It was attacking them even now, even though all the scans still showed no activity of any kind. Perhaps its existence was enough. It was a foul thing, and had to be purged from the galaxy.
"Is this what I must do, then? Destroy it and kill Sanguinius, precipitate war with the Ninth Legion, and possibly the Ultramarines as well?"
That would serve Horus well.
"And what is the alternative? Stay my hand and let this madness play out. Allow Davin to wreak havoc. Reach this point only to fall into a trap."
The destruction of Davin was an absolute imperative. If he had any doubts left after Epissimos, they would have been burned away by Sanguinius's actions. The corrupted worlds must die, and Davin was the source of the corruption.
"The Vicini has entered the atmosphere," said Stennius.
"Give the order," said the inner voice of brutal necessity. "You know what must be done."
The Lion nodded to himself.
"Captain," he said, "prepare to..."
He stopped. His blood froze at the enormity of what he was about to say.
"Cancel the bombardment," he shouted. "Prepare for a mass landing. We are taking Davin."
The Lion stormed from the bridge. He marched through the corridors, his fury warning all, legionary and mortal, from his path. He did not stop until he reached Kurz's cell. He dismissed the guards. He had no good reason for having come here. He hadn't consciously known where he was headed at first. He stood in the cell and faced the wall, staring at the empty manacles. He blinked and held up his right hand. There was a faint tremor in his fingers.
"So close," he whispered.
He had come within a word of murdering his brother. A word.
"A malign influence has been working on me."
An influence too subtle for him to feel its effects and resist them. Slowly and patiently it had been leading him to ruin. The Lion closed his eyes for a moment. When he opened them, the cell seemed too welcoming, as if he had come here to condemn himself.
He grunted and stepped into the corridor. He slammed the door closed behind him. He felt no freer. There were chains around him, all the stronger because he was not sure of their nature. He voxed Gilliman.
Rabute, he said. You must beware.
What have you done? Gilliman demanded.
You can't bombard...
I'm not, the lion interrupted.
But I almost did.
Gilliman fell silent, absorbing the implications.
Rabute, the lion said again. Beware of yourself. Do not trust your impulses. Be sure of your decisions. I almost destroyed us.
The lion walked on. His steps were heavy. Horror at what he had almost done warred with his anger at Sanguinius and his mistrust of himself. He longed to strike a blow against the enemy that had manipulated and shamed him. Perhaps the foe was the shadow Sanguinius had seen in the warp. Unwillingly, he looked back at every step of the journey since Macragge. Everything he had seen, every battle and every victory had led to this point. Events had shaped him. Events had shown him the need to destroy Davin. He didn't know what he was fighting. He marched faster to prepare for war. He could not escape the shadow that followed him, eroding every certainty, spreading doubt like plague. Beware of yourself. Though the lion's words were intended as a shield, they stabbed like daggers.
Ready our ships, Gilliman ordered. We launch for Davin immediately. What should we prepare for?
Gorod asked. The worst. He left them then, and made for his quarters where the Athames waited. He had kept his turmoil from his face and words. The effort had been considerable. His blood was running cold.
Be sure of my decisions, he thought. You have no idea how long I have been second-guessing them.
And he had been right to do so. The lion had almost made the worst possible one.
We are so fragile. We command this much might, and we can fall so easily.
He touched his neck, where Corpheron's dagger had pierced the flesh. He reviewed decisions, questioned logic, and saw the pattern. The reasoning that was pushing him to ruin was always strong. Its strength was its temptation. It disguised its true nature. Some decisions he might never be able to judge properly. Imperium Secundus would, he was sure, pursue him with doubts until his death. Others, though, he saw clearly in this moment of crisis. He had used the word-bearer's navigators, and because he had used the enemy's weapons successfully once, the urge to keep the Athames had grown stronger. He wondered how long the voice in his head had been speaking to him, shaping his thoughts, even though he did not hear it. He arrived in his quarters and opened the vault. He turned off the stasis fields and took out the daggers. He handled them with care. They were inanimate, simple, crude daggers, and yet much more than that. He placed them on the central flagstone of the chamber's deck. Behind his desk was an iron door. It was embossed in blue and gold. The Aquila embraced a gleaming sword with its wings. Gilliman pulled the door open and entered his private armorium. The weapons before him were the opposite in every way of the Athames. The daggers of ruin were crude, ugly things. They would pass beneath notice were it not for the dull, light-killing menace of their blades. The weapons of Gilliman's rule were works of majesty. They were the summits of the weaponsmith's art. They were tools of war, of death, of destruction, but in the service of reason and light, and their intent was as clear as that of the Athames. They brought purity to the battlefield. Their means were war, but their ends were peace and order. Gazing at the intricacy of the engravings on the barrel of the arbitrator and the hilt of the gladius in Candor, Gilliman felt clarity. His path was clear now. We all walk the assigned path. No. He walked according to his duty, but his will was his own. Gilliman reached for the Hand of Dominion. The power gauntlet was the purest expression right now of his will, and of the action he knew he must take. He pulled the gauntlet on and made a fist. A blue nimbus of lightning crackled around the fingers. It was the light of purity, the power of duty. The equation before him was simple.
Theoretical. The Athames are a poison. Practical. Destroy them. Gilliman knelt over the Athames. He raised the hand of dominion. And the thought occurred that his action was predictable. It would be the simplest thing to manipulate him into taking precisely this action. In the name of purity, he was about to deny himself, his legion, and the Imperium insight into what they fought, and weapons that were as dangerous to the demonic as any he knew.
Strike a blow and you harm yourself.
His fist was suspended, caught by a web of doubt.
Beware of yourself. Do not trust your impulses.
What impulse had been more forceful than the urge to destroy the Athames? He thought of the lion, poised on the brink of committing the unthinkable, convinced that he was acting to save the Imperium, preparing to kill his brother and open a new front of the war between the legions. If he had not pulled back in that moment, three legions would have burned inside the sphere of bones. The hand of dominion wavered. The currents of destruction swirled around Gilliman. The storm had him, he knew it, and he could not see his way out of the raging dark. The storm had rushed the lion to a monstrous choice, and it had pushed him to take action on a gigantic scale. The tempest had caught Gilliman in a more intimate trap. Instead of forcing him to recklessness, it had him caught in doubt and indecision. The action he would take or not would have no immediate effect outside his quarters. The range and skill of the attack took his breath away. The enemy moved against him and his brothers on the smallest and largest battlefields at once. Its precision was lethal. He could see the attack now, yet he did not know how to counter it, and the enemy was still invisible, untouchable.
Sanguinius, he thought. How has it attacked you? Are you aware it has? Have you already made your choice? Have you doomed us?
His thoughts wandered. He began to analyze the angel's actions from the end of the Imperium Secundus until now. He unclenched his fist.
The lion is right. Be sure of your decision before you make the wrong one.
He would return the Athames to the vault. His blood froze. He saw what he was doing. He saw himself falling to inaction and keeping these malevolent, corrupt knives. If he did not act now, he would never get rid of them. A storm surge of doubts crashed against him, but his arm was moving. There was too much force in the blow to arrest it. In the fraction of a second before the hand of dominion struck the Athames, he was torn between hope and dread. He tried to stop himself, and he fought that effort. He cried out, the roar of the self at war, shaking the walls of his quarters. Thunder boomed. Gilliman raised his fist. The hilts of the Athames were flattened, twisted metal. Their blades had shattered into dozens of shards, all of them sharper than darkness. Gilliman tore through the thoughts that tried to hold him back. Roaring still, hurling himself into the frenzy beyond reason, he smashed the blades again and again. He created another storm in his quarters, one of purging lightning and a thunder of desperate rage. He beat the deck, buckling it, sending tremors through the ship. The shards of the Athames became dust, and then less than dust. The remains vanished. He kept going until the roar ended and he fell back exhausted. He was numb. That was better than the acute edge of doubt. Gilliman staggered out of the crater. He returned to the Armorium and took the Arbitrator from its bronze case. Then he crossed to the chamber's entrance. The frame of the doorway was warped and cracked, holding the door shut. One blow with the hand of dominion knocked the door free and smashed it against the far wall. Gorod and a squad of Invictus were running down the corridor. They halted when Gilliman emerged.
My lord Gilliman,
Gorod asked.
I am well, Dracus.
Well enough, at least.
What happened?
I fought our first battle of this campaign.
I was victorious.
He would hold to this position until forced to relinquish it.
It is time we descended to Davin, he said, and stood by the side of my brothers.